This is Soundtrack, a music podcast about the music that impacts our lives. Every episode is a conversation of how music has shaped and influenced one's life, because music is the soundtrack to everyone's story. Soundtrack is hosted by Kyle Lichty.
Hey everyone, I'm here with Grace Borsma. How's it going?
It's good. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. We're here in Ada, Michigan. We've known each other for not even a year now.
Yeah.
It hasn't been. We first met in August of last year, and we were co-workers, and I got to see you teach in action. And
Yeah. It's a pretty awesome class, I will say that.
So as we got to know each other in that time, I really enjoyed getting to have conversations with you about all sorts of different things. And then I invited you and your husband to come to movie nights and really got to know you even more through our Oscar season of that. And
which was so much fun. I felt like I really could have conversations about all the different movies with friends and family, which I hadn't been able to do in previous years. So I think it's something we're going to continue doing into the future. So thanks for bringing that into our lives.
Yeah. I think it's tough because it's during wrestling season usually, and I'm exhausted when we start having people come over. But every time we get through the movie and there are people that want to talk about it, it's always just like, there's a reason why I enjoy doing this, despite the maybe how tired I might be.
You know, the only one I just really did not like this past year was Drive My Car, and I will go to my grave. I really disliked that movie. It took too long, but my husband thinks it was okay. And I'm just like, get out of our house.
I just remember the credits at like the 45 minute mark.
I couldn't. I had to pause the movie and just go walk around because I was just like, how is this the intro? Yeah. 45 minutes intro. What? So all you listening, I would not recommend it. Go watch something else. There's so many other movies you could spend your time watching.
It was
silent.
Yeah.
There was not like strong music. I do not remember any like strong music in that movie. There may have been some like background sounds, but it was very quiet throughout of it.
Anyway.
This is what we would talk about after my class because we had seventh hour. So it was the end of the school day and we could just talk about whatever came to our minds, which I will also say Kyle was one of the best professional help people I had in my class throughout my entire teaching career. He is so dedicated to the students. So shout out to him. He is absolutely amazing with students.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Let's talk about you. You were born in Grand Rapids, but you spent a lot of your time in a place called Three Rivers, which is almost to the Indiana border.
Yes. So I was in the Michiana area. Yeah. I'm surprised you knew what that was.
Which is gorgeous. I love that whole space. Mm-hmm. Just amazing.
Well, and so when you go south of Kalamazoo, you're kind of in the Schoolcraft area, and it's mostly cornfields. And so when you're driving down to Three Rivers on 131, it's just cornfields. And then you get to Three Rivers, and there's so many trees all around. You have all of the lush from the rivers right there. So it's kind of like this oasis in the middle of cornfields, because once you keep going south of Three Rivers, again, it's just cornfields.
Yeah.
So it's a very different place than Kalamazoo or anywhere in between.
Right. I'm from Fort Wayne, and so it's just predominantly, like you said, cornfields. And then so when I remember going to a person's house in Elkhart.
Oh, yeah.
And it just blew my mind to experience lakes and rivers and, you said, trees.
Yes.
Like, I mean, it's there in Fort Wayne too, but it not to that extent.
Yep.
So. Yep. Talk about what it was like to grow up in Three Rivers.
Oh my gosh. Well, I was rarely ever there. I went to a kindergarten to fourth grade. I was going to school there. And then my parents were like, I went to Catholic school my entire life. And so because the Catholic school I was at only went up to fifth grade, but the fourth and fifth grade classes were together. And so after fourth grade, my parents were like, we're not sending you to the same classroom with the same teacher to do fifth grade. And so we changed Catholic parishes at that point up in Kalamazoo, which is about 30 minutes away. And so I started going to the Catholic school of that parish and then continued on to high school up in Kalamazoo as well. So I really saw Three Rivers as the place that I slept at night and the place that I had dinner most of the time. But other than that, I didn't know anyone in Three Rivers. I didn't have any home in Three Rivers. It was just kind of a house and my family was there too. But other than that, there wasn't much there. And my mom was just always like, you cannot come back here. It's too much of a small town. You can't come back to Three Rivers. So I was always kind of pushed out from the beginning.
So if you spent a lot of your time in Kalamazoo, what was that like then to be in not only a bigger location in terms of population, but historic in some ways too, I would say.
Mm-hmm. Well, it was always weird for me having all my friends be up there. Every time I wanted to go hang out with someone, it was like, okay, you need to be home by 10. It's like, well, you really mean like 9:30 because I have to go drive home. And there's also not much to do in Kalamazoo if you're under 21. So like, it's also like kind of boring at the same time. So I would just go hang out at like friends' house and we'd go to different parks. But that was only like during the summer times, because during the school year, I was usually doing some sort of sport. So it was always, I had some sort of sport after school, and then I would go home and just be really tired, eat dinner, and probably go to bed at that point. So I wish I could tell you more about it, but because so much of my time was in the car going from point A to point B, that's what I just can't remember a lot of what was happening for fun, because a lot of it was just, I have to get to this, and then back home. And I was really busy. I was just a really busy person during that time.
Yeah. It's interesting that you say all the traveling in the car, and that's kind of your first experience with music, is listening to music in the car with your dad. Talk about that.
So my dad would usually play his CDs in the car, and usually they were one artist, and it would take my sister and I some time to remember who the artist was, because we'd always play this game of who sings this or what is this song called. And I was getting pretty good at artists. I couldn't always remember the song names, but I started, you know, identifying like Fleetwood Mac. Cars came on a lot. He really hated Guns N' Roses, and so I could easily identify Guns N' Roses songs. But after kind of listening to his CDs, then we just started kind of listening to the radio. And so with the radio, we'd listen to like classic rock, 70s and 80s music, and then also current music. And we just would always be singing along to the songs. My dad would be singing, my sister and I would be singing. Like, it was a very collective experience, and there was no shame on how we felt singing. Like, it just, however you wanted to sing, go ahead and sing it.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it was a really positive experience growing up.
Yeah. Do you feel like the artists that you mentioned were, my guess is those were what he was listening to at a young age?
Yes, I definitely think that's what it was. Yeah. He was born in 61. So, you know, by about 10, it's like early 70s, late 70s. So I think that's exactly what he was listening to as well.
Do you know why those specific type of, because it's more like new wave, you know, when you mentioned the cars and.
So I know he loved America Top 40 and Casey Kasem.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering if he heard a lot of that music on that and then became interested in it and kind of started exploring out on his own would be my guess.
Okay.
He now has Sirius Radio, which he is addicted to. He loves it. And so on like the 70s and 7, you can listen to old Casey Kasem, you know, top 40. Yeah. And he just absolutely loves it. Nice. So he has not grown anywhere far from that at this point.
Do you remember any of the songs that were popular at that time? The artists that you were listening to? I'm assuming this would have been the 90s.
Yeah. So it would be the things that I'm remembering, because we were usually listening to like pop. So I'm thinking like Britney Spears, NSYNC, Backstreet Boys, Christina Aguilera. That type of scene was starting to come up at that point. And so when we were sick of listening to 70s songs, because that would happen every once in a while, we'd want to listen to more current music, because like at school, that's what you sang. You sang the current music. And so it was good to have to know those songs as well.
Is that just from kind of peer pressure, you think, with other students, or was it just something that you were actually genuinely intrigued with?
With music, I think I like music that like makes you feel good, has a good rhythm, has a good beat. And I think in the 90s with that pop music, it just like was like, this sounds really good. Like they know exactly what they're making and I'm eating this up. I didn't know it at the time, but I'm like, this just is fun. Like it's just fun, poppy music. And so I think I liked it on that aspect. And then when you are in late elementary, middle school, it's being able to like know the music makes you, you know, a cooler person. I'm using quotes here. So like that kind of helped grow my confidence as well of like, oh, they're okay with me because I do know this music, but I would never tell them about, you know, the other music I have. Like that's weird. 70s is music to elementary students is weird. So
one interesting thing that you were able to do as at a young age was to go to a lot of these artists that you mentioned and see them live.
Yes.
Talk about that. I just find it fascinating that you were going to these.
Yeah, my dad always just got us tickets to these things. So the one that sticks out in my mind is we went to Comerica Park. It was pretty new at the time. And NSYNC was playing there. And so we had this umbrella, but you couldn't bring umbrellas in because this was, gosh, I'm pretty sure it was post 9/11 at that point, but you couldn't bring any umbrellas in, but it's outside and it was going to rain. So we had to get rid of this golf umbrella. It was a really cool umbrella, but we got rid of it. So anyway, we're in the stands and we see the stage and they turn off all the lights and, you know, everyone's screaming. And then the five guys are like zip lining down to the stage. And like, what the heck? Like, it was so cool. It was so, so cool. Cause this was just after their, gosh, I think I want to say like celebrity album. It was like their like early 2000s album is the one I'm remembering. So like Bye 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 was on that album. And so that was an amazing concert. And we saw O-Town, I think, in Holland, Michigan once. And like no one really remembers who O-Town is, but like that was a pretty cool experience. And so, and then also there was in fifth grade, I remember going to Elton John and Billy Joel. And I was like, who are these people? But I had heard their songs before. And my dad's like, oh, you're going to be fine. Like you've heard these songs. And we got there and, you know, I knew a decent amount of them. And so that was really cool to be able to go to that. And I remember seeing my fifth grade teacher the next day or, you know, the next Monday and told her what was going on. And she was just like, how did you get tickets to that? And so my dad would just buy tickets and surprise us with these concerts, because I wonder if part of that was because when he was younger, he didn't get to go to all of the concerts he wanted to go to. And because music was so important to all of us that we would just, he just wanted to experience that live music together. Yeah. And my mom would come every once in a while, but she wasn't as into the same type of music as the rest of us. So,
yeah, wasn't feeling the J.
No.
Timberlake.
No, gosh, no. Now she likes him, but she was not for it back then.
You have this interesting story with Schoolhouse Rock. I'm curious.
Oh my gosh. About
all the details here.
Yes. So I remember third grade, we had to memorize our times tables. And, you know, one's easy, two's easy. Those are, you know, so easy. And then we get to threes, and I'm just like, I cannot get this. And I'll be honest, I'm terrible at memorizing things. I make flashcards for everything, and I just hate memorization because it doesn't do anything. Like I can just look it up, you know? So anyway, I'm telling my dad this and he's like, well, I have something for you. I think it would really help. And so he had the Schoolhouse Rock album set, and it was kind of the size of a folder, and it was a trifold. And so they had like the math CD, the English CD, the science CD. And so he pulls out the math CD and he is like, well, let's just like listen to this. Like it might help you memorize everything. And so the Three is a Magic Number song is absolutely incredible. It is so incredible. And then he was like, Grace, I have something even better. There's a video to this. And so we watched the video online, and I think it was still, gosh, I think it was still dial up at that point. So we had to dial up to the internet. to watch this video. And it was just like, I got it. It clicked. And I think I can memorize when there's some sort of song attached to it, because I can, that rhythm and that beat helps me remember what I'm supposed to be remembering. And so I can do 3 times 1 all the way to 3 times 10, and then also go backwards. So I can do it pretty fast because the song had you go really fast forward and backwards.
3 times 7?
21.
Just giving you a hard time.
But it's like the one part, it's like 3, 6, 9, 12, 15, 18, 21, 24, 27, 30. And then they go backwards too by doing all the multiplications. It is a phenomenal song. So check it out if you've never heard it. But that gave me the confidence of like, no, you can do multiplication. You can do math. You're fine. Like, that was a really big roadblock for me because school came pretty easy. So to like really hit that roadblock, I was like, oh my gosh, what am I supposed to do? Yeah. And then my dad came through with some music. So that was really, really awesome.
We're both educators, but multiple intelligences come to mind mm-hmm. when you mentioned that.
Yeah.
And so this is a theory of different ways in which people learn.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them is through music.
Yeah.
And I'm just curious your thoughts with that theory and that song.
Yeah. I've seen a lot of discourse on this on Twitter, actually. There's a lot of educators that are very pro this, and there are a lot of educators like, there's no science in this. Yeah. There's no theory in this.
And this is part of why I'm bringing it up.
Yeah. And it's, I guess my stance on it is, if a student is telling me this is the best way that I learn, whether it's true or not, if it's placebo or not, I don't care. But if a student says this is the best way I can do this, I'm going to say, okay, then do that. If that's what's going to make you the most successful, I don't care what way you have to do it. Just go ahead and do it. So this past year, I had a student that just was like, I hate writing. I just hate it. I hate picking up a pencil and writing on paper. And I was like, okay, a lot to discuss there. But if you want to verbally tell me all of your answers, that's fine with me. And so I think that was just more of a verbal student, which is cool that, you know, he was able to do that. At the end of the year, I gave a project where they had to talk about some sort of environmental challenge the Earth is facing, and then talk about what people are doing to try to solve this challenge. And so I said, you can do whatever you want. So I had a group of students make a rap about food waste. I had students write a letter to Senator Gary Peters about light pollution. I had students make a podcast actually about invasive Nice. Species. Absolutely. And so they got to take that however they wanted to show me, you know, they're learning about this topic in a way that they felt the most comfortable and confident with. And I think that just brings in that creativity part that might be lacking in some classrooms, because it's, you know, I don't always see myself as a creative person. And then I remind myself, you are a teacher that engages students every day. You are creative. You do have that creativity. And so giving that to my students as well, I think is, you know, kind of coming back to that. However they want to learn is fine with me. We'll make it work. I don't care however you want to learn. That's good.
And I think it's important for all students to be able to have that ability to creatively problem solve,
mm-hmm.
whether it's an actual worldwide issue that we're all going to face at some point,
mm-hmm.
maybe later on 50 years from now or whatever, to maybe it's a problem at their work,
yeah.
you know, that needs to be resolved. Just to have that ability to push them
yep.
to trying something that is probably outside of their comfort zone
mm-hmm.
to begin with.
Yep.
And I think that's awesome that
yeah.
you did something like that.
And some students wanted to make a PowerPoint presentation. And I yeah. said, you have to record yourself going through it, because I'm not going to have you come up here and watch you bomb, because that is the worst feeling as a teacher. So I taught them how to like actually screen record while they were talking through their slides, and then I could just play that video when it was their turn to present. So yeah, I mean, kids know what they like. Kids know what they feel comfortable with. So let's honor that comfort, but still continue to push them outside that comfort zone like you were talking about.
Yeah. Let's talk about what happened in fifth grade. You joined band.
Yes.
And there's a lot to this.
Oh, yes, there is a lot to this.
Go ahead.
Just to start us off, I didn't know what I wanted to play. And so they had a like try out the instruments day, and I could not play any brass instrument I tried. I could not make a sound. And it was so like, well, I guess brass is out at this point. I can't do anything. And SpongeBob was pretty new at that point. So, you know, Squidward playing the clarinet. I was like, I don't really want to play the clarinet. I really wanted to play the oboe, which is a double reed instrument.
Yeah.
And I was told, no, you're too young to do that. And I was like, but I like the sound of it. And I love the vibration of the double reed. And they were like, no, it's too hard. You can start on clarinet and then work your way up to oboe. And newsflash, I never got to oboe. They just kept me on clarinet for my entire career as a clarinet player. So I ended up playing, I chose clarinet. I also could not make any noise on a flute. I literally could not do any non-woodwind instrument. And I did not like the sound the saxophone made. And so I was like, well, I guess my only option is clarinet at this point. So that's what I got.
This was something that your parents really pushed.
Yeah.
As well. And you resisted.
Yes. So fifth grade, you know, a lot of the students did band and then they quit. And so sixth grade comes around and there's like no one going to band anymore. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm so weird. I'm such a nerd. Like everyone's looking down on me. And I was like, Mom, Dad, please let me quit. Like, I don't want to do this anymore. And they're like, nope, we already signed over to like rent this clarinet. You're not doing that. You know, you have to do this until your freshman year of high school. And as a sixth grader, that sounds like a long time away. That's a super, super long time away. So I stuck with it. And my uncles here in Grand Rapids came down to Kalamazoo every time I had a concert. They were super supportive of that. Actually, my uncle Rick, he actually just retired from being a teacher, I think like 2 years ago. He played clarinet when he was in high school. So that was kind of a funny coincidence as well. And after, I think it was after eighth grade, so going into high school, he actually gave me his clarinet from when he was in high school, which was a wood clarinet because I was playing on a plastic clarinet. He had a wood clarinet, and so I was able to play on this really nice instrument going into high school. But I will also say I did find a blue clarinet at an antique store in South Haven, Michigan. And so that was my marching clarinet because we didn't want to bring the wood clarinet out into the humidity because it was just, you know, it might mess up the wood of the clarinet.
Yeah. What do you think it was that made you change from being so resistant to wanting to stick with it?
Marching band, 100%. We had band camp the summer before going into high school, and everyone in my section, all of the clarinet players, were just phenomenal female role models for me to look up to. There were four seniors that just, I mean, they were just incredible people. And by doing band camp before school started, I already had a group of people that I knew going into high school. So I wasn't so afraid of going into high school because I already had my group of friends. And there was actually another clarinet player whose name was also Grace. And so she went to the other Catholic school in Kalamazoo. And so we're like, wow, we're like really similar, you know, same name, play clarinet, have, you know, both went to Catholic school. And so I've kept up with her, you know, she's a doctor in DC at this point. And there's a trumpet player, Katie, who we've just been really good friends with. She's a pharmacist now down in Portage, Michigan. I mean, I think she has two kids now at this point. So, you know, lifelong friends that I gained from band, but it also gave me the confidence of band's not weird. You're not weird for liking this. You're just exploring your creativity side or your creative side in a different way than other people do, because I never saw myself as an artist, but you know, I could play an instrument pretty well. Yeah. It just, I loved it. I didn't love concert band so much, but I loved marching band. So I would stick with band to be able to do marching band again.
So, a lot of questions.
Go ahead.
That come to my mind, but you mentioned, you know, that you felt weird by, I'm assuming, your classmates.
Mm-hmm.
Why is it that stigma is there, especially within middle school? Like, I remember myself as a student, and that's like what others are telling me. Well, they're the weird ones, mm-hmm, because they're in band or orchestra or choir. and yet
where is it come from?
Where is that coming from?
Gosh, this is a question I don't know if I can answer, because if we could answer this question, then middle school would not be as sad for some people. I think in middle school, because you're kind of at this new build, you know, a lot of middle schools, you're going into a new building. And so, but for me, it wasn't. We K through eight were all in the same building. So we weren't even moving to a new building at that point. But for band, there were only like four of us in my class that would go off to band. And so my class was 50 students. And we were split into two, like there were two seventh grade, two eighth grade classrooms. And so to be the person that had to stand up in front of everyone else to then go leave and do something, I'm a very shy person. And so to like literally just to stand up and like grab my instrument and go was a very challenging thing, because I didn't want people to see me. And I think maybe there could have been a better way to do that, where like if we were all, you know, changing classes, but at my middle school, we only changed classes as a full class to the other grade classroom. And so it was like my homeroom teacher did everything except like in seventh grade, math and science. And then we would switch, and then the other class would get English and social studies with the teacher I had. And so I think just like being that weird person that like stands up all by themselves was just like, oh, they're different. They're not like us staying here. And I think that has a lot to do with that middle school mindset of you're weird. We can start pointing on you to make me feel better because you're not with us.
Yeah.
You know, and it's one of the reasons I just don't really want to teach middle school. I'm just not ready for that. So, but to all the middle school teachers out there, we love you. Mm-hmm. You're doing a great job.
Just from my experience of being in a middle school for 5 years mm-hmm. plus now, it's just how brutal they can be yes. to each other, and how petty, like to us as adults, it seems.
But it feels so important to that student. And I can understand that. And I will be honest. I was not bullied. I was not picked on. I had a pretty good middle school career, but I would never want to go back to it.
Yeah.
It's just not fun.
In terms of marching band, what some of those performances looked like, you know, what songs were, you know, put into the performances, and what was that like to be able to get to do those particular songs?
Yeah. My freshman year, we did a James Bond theme. And so we all wore tuxedos, which was pretty cool. But I really wanted to wear the helmet with the plume because that looked so cool. So we played theme songs from, you know, James Bond, which was cool. And then my sophomore year, we got a new band director, and the title of the show was Monsters of Rock. And it was the best show I've ever done. So we did Frankenstein was in that one. Iron Man was in that one. And then we ended with Thriller, which we actually had to put our instruments down and we danced out Thriller in the halftime show. Wow. That was so cool. It was so cool. And then the next year, it was more rock, but the only song I can really remember was, gosh, oh, I, no, I'm sorry. My sophomore year was Santana. So we played a lot of Santana music, which was, you know, cool. My senior year, we did another rock one. And so we played Bohemian Rhapsody. And we actually did it's where everyone lines up in a straight horizontal line and you move as one line. And we did it really, really well. And it's something that's difficult because everyone's steps have to be at the same distance. So you keep that straight line. And so that I remember Bohemian Rhapsody was kind of the final song. And that was really cool. I can't remember any of the other ones, but it was really cool to play music that people could identify, because I think with band, we play a lot of songs, like especially in concert band, you don't really know any of the songs that we're playing. So for marching band to play songs that people know, they can become part of that performance as well and enjoy that music that we're playing. Yeah.
It's so interesting how important the movements are, because I mean, you can get a huge crash that can take place.
Oh yeah.
By one mishap.
The charts that you have to like look at, like it would be like a football field and you have to find your X, and then you see like this is like count 8, this is count 12 on the next page, and you have to like, you're like, okay, I have this many counts to get this many yards. And so sometimes people were like literally leaping to try to get to their mark. It was so, oh my gosh. And then, but then sometimes you're like barely moving because you're only moving maybe 2 inches on the field, but you still have to get to that spot.
Yeah. While playing an instrument.
Yes. Yes.
That's what's so crazy.
I kind of forget how intense marching band is because I loved it so much. I mean, I just, everything was, marching band was just so important to me. And I really got to be that marching band person.
Have you seen any of the Ohio State marching band?
Oh, yes.
Have you seen some of those?
Oh, yes. Like, just, it's incredible.
Amazing.
Are they the ones that did, like, they were like throwing a piece or like they were throwing a basket?
I think so.
Gosh, I
they
just.
And then they did one where they did the moonwalk. Michael Jackson.
Yes, I remember that one too. It's incredible to see these huge bands because that's the other thing. My band in high school was maybe 50 kids, which is really, really small. But I also went to a high school where my graduating class was 100 kids. So it was a very, very small group of students, but we were still able to make some of these intricate designs on the field while playing those musical instruments.
One interesting thing that takes place in middle school, and this was actually surprising to me, was you come across a band called Death Cab for Cutie.
Yes. Yep.
Which is your favorite band.
Yep.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm curious, how did, as an eighth grader, what made you fall in love with emo Death Cab?
Oh gosh. Well, this may not surprise any of these listeners out there, but you know, being a band person and I loved learning. Like, I cannot state how much I love learning. I also love to read. So like my summers growing up, I would always be in the library finding new books. And so I found this book, I think it was at Barnes and Nobles, I can't remember, but it was an MTV produced book, which I was like,
weird.
MTV is making books. So it was a weird story, but I can't remember what it was based on, but this girl goes to like boarding school, but there's this like weird guy, Heathcliff. What is the story with Heathcliff? That's what it's based on.
Okay.
And so she was always freaked out by this other guy, but he was always trying to like, you know, make sure she was safe. And it was kind of like a mystery, but the main character always went back to her room to listen to Death Cab for Cutie and specifically Soul Meets Body. And so I was like, oh, well, this book's kind of interesting. I might as well go check out this artist. And I think what I did is just bought the CD because that's kind of what you did back then. Oh, actually, I think I may have bought the song on iTunes and then just put it on my iPod. And I was like, this is really good. I really like this song. And so I actually got the whole album. And I just, to this day, I think that's one of the best albums ever created, which was Plans by Death Cab for Cutie. Just, I honestly think that album tells a story. If you kind of listen to what the songs are and where they're placed on that album, it really does kind of make a story, you know, with your Marching Bands of Manhattan kind of introducing it. And then you have Soul Meets Body. And I'm thinking of like What Sarah Said, which is a, you know, really sad song. And then you also have Brothers on a Hotel Bed, of just like, you have no connection to that person that you're next to. So if you've never listened to that album, I would definitely check it out.
Yeah. And I think a fan favorite of I Will Follow You in the Dark, mm-hmm, too, is on there.
Yeah.
It's interesting. I remember in your classroom, I don't know if you remember this.
Oh, gosh.
I forget which student, but they asked you, what's your favorite music? And you played Marching Bands of Manhattan.
Oh, really?
And your students were like, what?
Oh my gosh.
What is this?
Yeah, it's definitely not the music they listen to. I felt like I couldn't play Soul Meets Body. I felt like, it's kind of crazy in the title, but Marching Bands of Manhattan, that one is a little bit safer to play.
It was funny hearing their reaction and seeing just like, it wasn't like a disgust, but it was just like utter confusion.
Like, no,
they were worried about you.
They saved the disgust for my shoes.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And my Dansko clogs that, yeah, you know, my feet don't hurt at the end of the day.
Yeah. That reminds me, I play music in my classroom too. And every time I let my students get to know me. I always talk about music and mm-hmm. concerts I've been to. And every time, you know, it's like Coldplay, U2, 1975, and even like a more recent band. And none of them know who Coldplay is.
Even Coldplay.
Yeah. And so it's always funny when, oh.
This made me who I am.
I must be that old.
I know. I do forget how old I am, and I'm older now. I'm definitely older now. Yeah. They've never heard of any of the music I like. I'll say that.
But I just remember like internally laughing. Yeah, I didn't want to laugh too loud.
You could have laughed out loud. It's okay. In the classroom, I'm a pretty confident person. I would have been like, whatever. I like that you told me that it was just utter confusion. Like they just did not process what was happening.
It's interesting because emo's kind of had a comeback.
Yes.
But it's more of like Travis Barker type of with Blink-182 yep. type of emo with Machine Gun Kelly.
Yes, that's exactly what I was going to bring up.
So it's interesting that, yeah, even though it's a slightly different emo, it is still something
it's pretty emo
that,
still.
That they should be familiar with.
Yep.
But they were not. And they, like I said, I thought they were like gonna try to help you out or something. It was just hilarious.
You know, I will say that class you were in, that seventh hour class, was just a phenomenal class. It was just a really fun class. And so when you say like, you know, help me out, introduce me to more music, they probably would have.
Oh, yeah.
No doubt in my mind, they would have been like, Miss, this is what you need to be listening to. I would have been like, I like my old stuff. I know how it goes. I don't have to learn something new.
Just knowing that particular class, it probably would have been something that you just would not want to play
if
Conklin were to
walk in. And that's why I usually stick to that lo-fi, because there are no lyrics, so I cannot get in trouble.
Well, let's keep talking about Def Cab. Ever since having listened to Plans, how they've grown, what I mean, because you've only talked about how you established your love for them, but how has it continued since then?
Oh, wow. Well, I think I listened to that album a lot. And I still even today listen to that album. And I just really like it. I bought their other music and I've listened to their newer music. But I just continue to go back to that album. I think part of that reason is because I found something that was different than my mom and my dad and my sister. Like no one, they were like, this is kind of weird. I'm like, okay, but I really like this. And this person in this book who seemed really cool also really liked it. So it must be okay that I like this too. And so that was my first time really exploring that indie genre. And I think that's why it has such an important place in my musical heart, because it really allowed me to explore so many more artists that I love. And, you know, today I still like these artists because I got to meet them through Death Cab for Cutie.
You say it's kind of like a way where you were able to find yourself.
Yeah, probably. I mean, that album is what started my enjoyment and journey with indie music, whether it's indie punk, indie rock, indie pop, whatever it is. If it's in that indie genre with Death Cab for Cutie, I'm probably going to enjoy it because that opened the indie world to me.
Yeah. Have you seen them live?
Yes, I have. I actually saw them. This would have been, 2014, 2015. I was student teaching in Detroit and I saw that they were going to come to the Fox Theater, and my boyfriend, now husband, he was at MSU and I was at U of M, and I was like, we have to go. This is my number one favorite band. We have to go. And he was like, yeah, of course we'll go. And so we went to go see them, and it just was like, it was so incredible. Plus Fox Theater in Detroit is an incredible venue.
Yeah.
And so I just was like in utter happiness, just so happy, just gleeful, just singing along with all the songs. They had this like LED screen behind them, and the patterns that they had on them were so cool. And so with that too, my husband and I are like, if our favorite bands come, we have to go, whatever that might be. And so Nick's favorite band is gosh, they sing the song Chop Suey.
Oh, System of a Down.
System of a Down. That is his favorite band. And so they
what?
I know.
I'm like,
yeah, it's
I don't know him that well, but I would have never thought.
No, but it's very anti-government.
Sure.
So I think that's what he really likes. So they came to DTE, which I think goes by a new name now, and he was like, we have to go. I was like, okay, I've literally never heard any of their songs. He was like, it'll be fine, it'll be fine. And so he had a great time. I was watching a lot of sociology unfold right in front of me, which, you know, I also majored in sociology, so I got to really look at a lot there.
Yeah. Wow. System of a Down.
It's like Blink-182, System of a Down are his two favorite.
Yeah.
You'll have to explore that later.
Yeah, we'll talk with them about that in a second.
Yeah, my husband is a very soft-spoken, I would say, pretty reserved person. So for someone like that to love System of a Down, I think is very funny.
Was he like moshing and or like rocking
out? Oh, he was rocking out the whole time. He knew all the songs. He just was... I had never seen him enjoy music like that before because he's like silence. Like when we're in the car, he'd rather have no music than music. But so we've been okay with like podcasts because I'm like, I want to listen to something in my ride. And so, yeah, I had never seen him engage in music like that. So that was a really eye-opening experience for me of like, oh, he actually does like music. Before that, I didn't think he really liked music. So.
Have you heard any of the recent songs from Death Cab? Or maybe you didn't even know.
I may have heard one on the radio. There's an alternative radio here in Grand Rapids that I will sometimes play if I'm done with a book or whatnot. But no, I will say I'm not great at finding new things because I tend to just want to go back to the music that I know. And so like if someone puts a playlist together for me, I will listen to it and I will enjoy it. But I just hate going out and finding music that I like. And so that's why I always tend to go back to the music that I know. So no, I have not heard it. I'll have to look it up to see what they got.
It's very bizarre for okay. Death Cab.
Okay.
It's very brash, a very kind of jarring listen, just knowing their, you know, sound. And then they released the second song and it's typical Death Cab. Like,
really?
So it was just like,
Where did this come from?
What's going on here?
Well, and I do like, I also really like Postal Service, yeah, which was kind of that one off. And I was like, oh, I mean, I feel like every song from that I love as well. But that's also very traditional Death Cab for Cutie. And I think that's why I like it so much because it kind of fits into that, this is Death Cab for me.
So high school comes around, so you're establishing your indie roots and you're really starting to expand your taste and things like screamo, which
yes.
is just like knowing you, this is similar to Nick with System of a Down, just like what?
Yeah.
But that was so typical of that time.
Like middle aughts, yeah. Middle late aughts. That's when I was in high school.
Just interesting how like that was like huge part of, you know, the teen population was listening to that kind of music.
Yes. My mom was always very concerned. She was really scared of me being emo. And I would never describe myself as emo. I think some friends would, but I liked the look of it. And I liked the music too. So it wasn't like I was, you know, posing about it. Like I actually enjoyed that culture. And my first kind of big concert that I chose to go to was Panic at the Disco. And this is when I Write Sins Not Tragedies came out, like on MTV. And I was like, I absolutely love how weird this is. It's so weird. And so we went to a concert in Grand Rapids and we got general admission passes so we could be on the floor. And the opening band was the Dresden Dolls, which I don't know if they're anything at this point, but they were really screamo. And I was like, wow, I've listened to the album of Panic at the Disco a lot. And it's not that screamo, but Dresden Dolls definitely was. And so I was like, I'm kind of interested in this. I want to know more about this. And so, yeah, we saw Panic at the Disco and it was absolutely phenomenal. I will forever remember that. And then, so then I started kind of exploring more screamo, and Scaring Kids was probably my favorite band. Have you ever heard of that one?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, really?
That's been on a long time that I've heard that name.
Yeah. Taking Back Sunday is probably a more well-known name. Angels and Airwaves I really liked.
Yeah. True Love is awesome.
Incredible. I just was really starting to explore these different things. And we went to go see, there's another concert I went to up here in Grand Rapids again, and my mom didn't want to go, but I was going with a friend, and so she like got my uncles to go with me, and they just sat in the back and drank basically back there as I was up in the front. And I remember getting lifted up to like crowd surf for the first time, and I was like, I love this. Like, I'm on top of the world. I feel great. And I never thought about the dangers. And now I'm like, I can't believe I did that. But I'm really glad I experienced it then. And so, like, you know, every once in a while, we'd be in the mosh pit too. And, you know, that was really fun. And again, very dangerous. I don't know why I was doing this. I think I just loved being part of that. I wasn't too concerned about the dangers. And if I ever wanted to get out, like, I mean, older people, usually guys would just kind of like pull me out. And I was never in a bad situation, which I know is not the case for other people in these experiences. But I never had like a bad experience with a stranger there. They were always just like, we are a community together, and we're going to make sure our own are taken care of.
What's the feeling of being in a mosh pit or crowd surf? What is it that made it so enjoyable?
I think with the crowd surfing was, I'm a really big rule follower, and crowd surfing is not something that you're supposed to be doing at a lot of these shows, because as soon as you start getting to the front, the security will like pick you down and be like, all right. And sometimes it would actually mark your hands for like how many times they had to pick you off of the crowd. And so I think that was my way of like breaking the rules a little bit, because, but I also felt okay with it because other people were doing it. So I wasn't like just me. And with the mosh pitting, it was more like you're just really into the music. Like, you just were like expressing yourself in a way that you don't usually while listening to the music. And it's so loud, and you feel the energy around you, and you're just putting that energy out with moshing like that. I mean, that's truly what I think it was for me.
We've talked a little bit on even like pop punk, mm-hmm. in some ways, like you mentioned Taking Back Sunday, mm-hmm. and I'm reminded of like Fall Out Boy.
Oh gosh. Yes.
Paramore.
Yes.
Why did that blow up when it did?
Because I wonder if it's like millennials started to make music. I think those were the younger millennials, and they started to make music. And so I think a lot of like me, I was kind of like, this is so different. This sounds different to me, even though it's, you know, kind of like new wave stuff, kind of new wavy, a little bit 80s metal, a little bit, but it sounded new to me, and it made my parents be like, what is this? And so that like detachment from my parents at that point of like, I can listen to this music and they don't like it, and that's cool because they don't like it. I think we're all kind of experiencing that. And so that genre was the one that allowed a lot of younger millennials to kind of dissociate from their parents' musical taste.
Interesting.
But I do love Fall Out Boy. Yeah. My husband and I have seen them 3 times. Nice. While together. And I saw him a 4th time before I even knew him.
Oh my goodness.
I was a chaperone for my sister. Yeah. And my mom's like, will you go be a chaperone for a Fall Out Boy concert? I'm like, yeah, absolutely. I will. Yeah. So that was awesome.
What was it like to see them?
Amazing. It's absolutely amazing. They love to play songs from Under the Cork Tree, which is probably my favorite album. I know it's like the most popular one, but all of the songs on there are just so much fun. Infinity on High as well, great one.
Yeah.
They found their sound, and mm-hmm. We just love those 2 albums. So if we're ever driving through national parks, I'll download those albums and we'll just listen to them and sing through the entire album together.
Nice. College comes around and you are starting to continue to branch out, and folk music is, or indie music, both kind of are what's driving mm-hmm. your taste. How did that come about?
Mostly, that's what people were listening to at Hope College, which is a really small liberal arts college. And I also started using Pandora a lot. So I did not have Wi-Fi in my house growing up. I was never able to like go on my cell phone to look things up, or a laptop, or even the computer. I couldn't even really do that. The only music I was listening to was like on iTunes, and you know, you could only listen to like the 15-second sample, and it was like, well, I don't know if I like this. And the computer was in this like kind of TV viewing area, so you couldn't ever just like listen to music on YouTube. So anyway, I found Pandora because my roommate's like, oh, you should use Pandora to listen to music. So I would type in like, you know, Death Cab for Cutie, and then like every once in a while, like Iron and Wine would come on, and I'm like, oh, this is very different, but I also really like it. And so I started like an Iron and Wine playlist, and then like Fleet Foxes would come on, and I'm like, I really like this. And so Pandora really opened my eyes to more artists that I started to like, I just didn't know about at the time, partly because I was really only listening to the radio, and there's not a lot of indie music on the radio, especially while I was in high school.
Have you heard it's not really new now, but the newest Fleet Foxes
album? No, I have not. When did that come out?
2020.
Yeah, I don't find new music as often anymore. No,
that's all right. It's interesting how they've slightly changed, but I really enjoyed a song called Can I Believe You? And it's fantastic. And then they've done even some collaboration with, are you familiar with Bon Iver?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
So not with necessarily Bon Iver, but the created this kind of side project called Big Red Machine, which is with one of the Dresner brothers of The National.
Oh yeah.
And so then the three of them do this song. It's really cool too.
You'll have to write this down for me for later.
Yeah. The song's called Phoenix, and it's really good.
Okay.
That came out last year, I think. So
another one that was popular, I never cared for it, but Sufjan Stevens was another one.
Who?
Sufjan Stevens.
Sufjan Stevens?
Oh, is that how you say it?
S-U-F-J-A-N.
Yeah.
Yeah.
At Hope, that's how we always said it. Wow. Whoa.
Wait, what? Which is interesting because he went to Hope.
I know. Which is wild. Yeah. How do you say it?
Sufjan.
Sufjan.
I've never heard that pronunciation.
Yeah, that's what people call it. It's that Midwest thing.
Yeah, it must be.
I never, you know, his songs are somewhat catchy. I never really liked them that much. I don't know what I didn't love so much about, because the music was great, the rhythms were great. Maybe it was just him singing. I don't know. I just never cared for it.
He's interesting in that he has that folky side, but then he has like this electronic side too. And he'll mesh those two at times. And that can be, I think, a little difficult for people to like as well sometimes.
And I will say, I like that he bases his albums off of like states and then like writes songs about those. I think that's a really cool concept too. And I just never got into him.
Some other indie bands that you were interested in that time?
Oh my gosh. The Shins comes up.
Yeah.
I like them. Gosh, if you probably listed them, I would have been like, yep. I can't. And it was on Pandora, and it was always on another tab. So I was always like, oh, I like this. And then just keep working. Again, because I was a huge study holic and nerd and just did work all through college. Mumford & Sons came out a lot. So I liked Mumford & Sons. Then I got overplayed at Hope College because I don't know why, actually.
Well, I think they have spiritual elements in their songs.
Oh, yeah. I think you're totally right on that, actually.
Like, I think a lot of people would classify themselves as a Christian, really connected with those songs.
Mm-hmm. Yep. You're probably totally right there.
So after college, you're starting to, the butterflies are starting to erupt.
Okay.
As you're getting to know him, video game music starts to
come
into the discussion.
Yeah. So growing up, my dad would play computer games, and I would go sit on the desk with him, and we would play together, and he would just kind of do everything. And I would say, oh, I think you should do this. And we were always on the same wavelength. And I just always enjoyed that. The stories through video games is just so incredible. And I think Nick was really nervous to like explain that he was into video games. So I kind of made that leap of like, hey, I like watching video games. And I think he just didn't, he thought I was saying that just to like get him to like me more. And I was like, no, I really enjoy watching video games. And so we started playing, and his favorite collection of video games probably is Legend of Zelda, specifically Wind Waker and Breath of the Wild. And all of the Legend of Zelda games just have absolutely phenomenal music. Twilight Princess had an orchestra record all of their songs. But I think Breath of the Wild, probably that's one of their newest Zelda game, just incredible music. And in some of the older Zelda games, so I think it was in Sage of Seasons, I think is what it's called, there's actual musical mini games that you have to complete if you want to, like, you know, get a heart up. And so we actually have played almost all of them here, and he was just like, I can't do this. And you have to dance and jump at the beat, and he just does not have that rhythm. And so I will take over at that point. So whenever there's like a musical element, I will definitely take over that point in the games. That's all I can really do, though.
One of the things that you've mentioned to me is that video game music has come a long way.
Yes.
Why has it improved so much?
Nick would be able to tell you way more here, but before it was like 8-bit music. Yeah. And so they could only have certain tones. And so you were hearing the same tones over and over and over again. And so when they started, so I know a lot of Nintendo. I know there are other systems, but with Nintendo, when you have that GameCube, you finally can start having legitimate music tell the story while you're playing that game. So Ocarina of Time, another Zelda game, that was such an incredible leap in the video game world. And so not only do you have this 3D space, you also have this music that means something at that point in time when you're playing that game. So like all of the dungeons have their own song, different towns have a song. And when we hear that music, we can immediately identify, oh, that's in this part of the game.
Yeah.
Just last night we were listening to, it was kind of a compilation of different songs, and I heard it and I was like, oh my gosh, this is from Majora's Mask when you're in the dungeon, like trying to sneak through some things. And I was like, Nick, you know where this is from? And he's like, I don't think I do. And he finally got it after some time, but it just like, it brings you back to what that part of the game really was.
That's interesting. I'm not very familiar with video game music, but it just interesting that you can make those kind of connections, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
What are you listening to currently?
Mostly just lo-fi. My husband doesn't like listening to a lot of music, but he's okay with lo-fi. And so there is like video game lo-fi. And so that's when people take different, you know, video game music and make it more lo-fi-y. Lo-fi Christmas music is one of my favorites. It's very, very specific. And it, you know, it's those Christmas songs that I grew up with, but I think it's almost sometimes a better way. It's a little bit more relaxing than uppity. I play lo-fi for my students because I want them to be able to have that music in the background so they're not afraid to talk out loud, because if I have music, then no one can hear them except their table. But also, I know that there's not going to be any like words that I can't play in the classroom, but it still has that rhythm to get them going. And I've thought about playing some video game lo-fi because I know some of my students do play video games.
Right.
But I haven't made that leap because I know that there is still kind of a little bit of a stigma of playing like sports video games, because that's mostly what students play, versus playing more storyline video games. And so I haven't made that jump yet because I don't want to ostracize students that maybe don't play video games and then being like, you know, what is this? This is so strange. But you know, maybe they will like it. So I've kind of just stuck with the lo-fi way, and I'll probably continue down that path.
What other ways do you implement music into the classroom as a teacher?
Whenever students are talking about problems, and students talk a lot in my classroom, I don't want them to ever feel like other people are listening to them and judging them for what they're saying. So I always play music during that time. If students want to turn in projects of music, I'm okay with that. Like I said earlier, people created a rap on food waste, you know, which is a big problem, and they were able to bring their own creativity in that. I think I will just continue to kind of play that music in the background. And students always ask why I'm, you know, if I'm depressed because the music is kind of depressing. And I'm depressing. I don't know. Maybe it's because I was emo before. I'm like, yeah. I've heard depressing music. This is not it. And I'm like, I'm not sad. And so I still think it kind of starts that like, oh, in Mrs. Boersma's room, we listen to a very specific type of music that's really chill and mellow, because I also don't want to amp them up, because if I'm playing the music they want, it's a disaster. You know, this is my eighth year teaching. I know what that is like. We're going to stick with the lo-fi because I know that they, even though they say they don't like it, they don't hate it. No, they don't hate it. So
I think it's interesting how, like, and I know from my own experience of instrumental, primarily non-vocal music, how helpful that is with when you're writing a paper or finishing some type of homework. And I saw that with your students too. How helpful, I think, how effective that was.
I remember that other thing I was going to say, and this kind of is linking together here. Video game music is produced in a way that it can be in the background, but also kind of keep your thinking forward.
Right.
Because you're trying to figure puzzles out. I think lo-fi is kind of that same thing in my classroom of, it's not distracting, but it's got this rhythm to kind of keep you thinking. And then I'm also asking you to think about the topics we're discussing in class. So you still have that rhythm in the background while you're talking through something.
Yeah. Oh, that's awesome. Why do we listen to music? What is it about music that is something that we enjoy?
I know for me, like I said before, it's sometimes hard for me to see myself as a creative person, but enjoying music makes me feel creative because I'm enjoying someone else's creativity. And I'm able to identify, these people were able to make this song that I'm really, really enjoying for these reasons. And I think it makes us feel good, or it makes us feel good, bad, sad, whatever it may be. It makes us feel without having to put a lot of work into it. And so to have that feeling of, you know, happiness when you're having a bad day without having to, you know, go run for those endorphins, it's like, that's really nice that I can just put on a happy music to start feeling a little bit better.
Well, Grace, thanks for doing this.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm so glad that we were able to do this in the summer.
Yeah.
So thank you for having me on. I really had fun.
Thank you for listening to Soundtrack with Kyle Lichty. Each person interviewed has created a playlist of the very songs that have impacted their life. If you are interested in listening to their playlist, you can head straight to our website at soundtrack.fireside.fm. Click on Soundtrack Playlist, and it will take you straight to their playlist on Spotify. If you like the podcast and want to know more, check out our Instagram at Soundtrack Podcast, or leave us a review on your podcast platform of choice. Join us next time on Soundtrack.